the pulpit mic for just a moment before the special. I'm always honored to have our guest speaker with us. He was a blessing. He was here a few weeks ago, but he had a different agenda then. He's got a focus now on stewardship, and probably, just my opinion, probably in our day, Dr. J.C. House is probably the most prepared and the most focused preacher that I know of in evangelism today on the area of stewardship. And let me just say this, church, he does practice what he preaches. And he has helped our church immensely over years and years and years. And if you'll listen carefully tonight, the Holy Spirit will speak to you through the man of God. And after the special tonight, it's my pleasure to introduce to you our special guests for the stewardship conference tonight. Tomorrow night, please remember, at 7:30, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And I hope that you'll be back and in your place. And I promise you, if you will, he'll help you in this area of stewardship. So after the song, I'm going to ask Dr. House to come preach to us. When my soul was disturbed with sorrow, when my heart was burdened with sin, Jesus opened his arms of mercy, and he tenderly took me in. And there's peace in the time of trouble, there is peace in the midst of the storm, there is peace though the world be raging, in the shelter of his arms. There's storms that we all encounter. Do not fear, they will do you no harm. In the Lord you will find protection, in the shelter of his arms. Though the world all around is raging, and it's filled with many alarms, trust in Jesus and he will keep you in the shelter. And there's peace in the time of trouble. There is peace in the midst of your storm. And there's peace though the world be raging, in the shelter of his arms. There is peace though the world
Lester's been working on his singing since I was here last. He felt a little threatened, and I knew he'd pick it up a notch or two if I just gave you a little hint of what I'm holding back on. It's good to see the good crowd here tonight. Miss Smith, I am delighted to see you. I've often wondered if you were still going to church. That's an encouragement. Surely is. I'm almost afraid to tell you what book I'm preaching out of, since the pastors had all this stuff going on with this other gospel and all of that. But I'm committed, so if you'd look in Galatians, please, chapter 5. I'm going to stay away from that other gospel stuff, though, that's for sure. I don't have a clue what's going on. I don't want to get in on it. Galatians chapter 5. We're here with an assigned subject this week, stewardship. I absolutely love the theme, the character of Christianity, stewardship, the character of Christianity. What a man does with his money is an absolute index of the character of that man or that woman. And what an amazing theme. I appreciate that very, very much. And I'm not going to get into the brochure because the pastor is going to in a little while. I guess this is the 24th year that I've been here, preached 4 or 5 stewardship sermons each year. So you can figure that up. If you can't, you need to drop out of Bible college. But there's a thought here tonight that's been on my mind, and it's sort of an introductory, not to stewardship, but to something else that definitely deals with our stewardship. Paul is writing here to these converts out of Judaism. And the Judaizers have been visiting, and they're trying to instill in these folks who've been converted, all right, you're saved in Christ, but there's a plus. You've got to keep saved by the law. And Paul is saying no such thing. And I don't want to take the time to elaborate on that, but that's what we're going to deal with as I work down to the text verses. Chapter 5, verse 1. This is one of those times you can stand, believe it or not. I'm going to read it and get through with it. Stand fast, therefore, in the liberty wherewith Christ hath made us free. Is that not wonderful? But now, don't go crazy there, because he's going to put a little postscript on that made us free over here just a little further. All right? And be not entangled again with the yoke of bondage. Behold, I, Paul, say unto you, that if you be circumcised, Christ shall profit you nothing. Dealing with that old law thing now. For I testify again to every man that is circumcised that he is a debtor to do the whole law. I mean, if circumcision's going to do it for you, then you've got to keep the entire law. Christ is become of no effect unto you. Whosoever of you are justified by the law, you are fallen from grace. And boy, that right raises the red flags in an independent Baptist, doesn't it? Paul talking about falling from grace. That's what he said, wasn't it? Well, now you and I know very well from the teaching of the Bible, and when we talk about falling from grace, usually, I hope always, we're talking about some heretical group who teaches that you can be saved and then lose your salvation, fall from grace. That's what we think about. Well, you and I know that that is an impossibility. Do we know that? It is an impossibility. You can't be saved and then get unsaved. You may go to heaven on cigarettes, fingernails, and coffee, but you're going to heaven if you've been saved. All right. But he did say falling from grace, didn't he? He said, you are fallen from grace. But it wasn't talking about salvation. That is a grace act, for by grace are you saved through faith, and that not of yourselves. Okay. But there's something else about grace that's thrown in there in another book. Not only are we saved by grace, but there's something we're to do in grace. And that is what? We are to grow in grace. And he's saying to this crowd, you pay attention to that law crowd, and you don't grow any. Well, let's get on. For we through the Spirit wait for the hope of righteousness by faith. For in Jesus Christ neither circumcision availeth anything nor uncircumcision, but faith which worketh by love. You did run well. Who did hinder you that you should not obey the truth? This persuasion cometh not of him that calleth you. Let me read verse 7 again, our thoughts there for the night. You did run well. Who did hinder you? Isn't that interesting? We read about this crowd, and we if we're not real careful, we think, you know, that's a sorry bunch of Christians. Don't we? They ought to know better than that. No. Paul said, oh, you were running a good race. You did run well. I mean, this crowd got saved, got their act together, and were running a good race. And now they've fallen from grace. And Paul has this one question. Who did hinder you? Now, some of you have listened to many stewardship sermons. The pastor, Brother Smith before, every once in a while when I drop by, and you got started pretty well. You run a good race for a while, and you fell from grace. My question tonight is, what hindered you? Why are you still where you were 24 years ago for some of you? Why has there been no growth? Would you be seated, and we'll explore that for a few moments. Now, remember, in our context, just so we keep the context right, these Jews are trying to get these folks to add the Jewish law to faith in order to be saved. And Paul says, nope. He said, and when you start even dealing with that, you are not growing. Now, we need to remember that growth is important. You remember when you were growing up, every boy wanted to be the biggest. Every girl wanted to grow up where she could chase the boys. Nothing has changed. When I grew up over in southwest Arkansas. Didn't grow up there, but I was born there and stayed there till I could get out. And every once in a while, once I got to be 3 or 4 years old, every once in a while, my dad would push me up against the door facing. And he'd put his finger on top of my head and get his old case knife out. And he'd notch that door frame right at the top of my head. Somebody said, he cut on your house? It didn't hurt it. 6 months later, he'd push me up there and do the same thing again. Put his finger up there, notch that door frame, get me out of the way, and he'd look at it. You know what my daddy was trying to find out? He was trying to find out if I was normal. I know you wonder, but he was checking it. So I said, I don't get it. Well, normal children grow. I mean, you get a kid that stops growing, there's something bad wrong. You know, somewhere we've gotten messed up. And physical growth is very, very important. But spiritual growth is more important, and we don't give it a thought. Some here tonight, no doubt, just perfectly content with being right where you were the day you got saved. Or maybe you made it a year or two, and then you settled in. And some of you, you tolerate the stewardship conference, but you're not about to tie into it and grow financially and spiritually. Now, why wouldn't a Christian want to grow in that area? Well, what is it that would hinder our growth? Now, I'll submit to you this statement. The Christian life demands constant growth. Paul said, we have not attained. None of us are where we ought to be. None of us are what we ought to be. None of us are giving what we ought to be giving. You say, well, I'm giving all I can. That's your problem. You're counting on you instead of God. You need to get out of your hands and into the hands of God. So, who has hindered you? Well, it's a rhetorical question. Paul didn't want them to answer it. He's going to answer it. That's the way a preacher is. You know. And he does a wonderful job of it. And just for time tonight, I want us to look as we set our mind for the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday services. I want us to look at why we're where we are tonight. I don't want us talking about where we ought to be. I want us getting from the Word of God why we've fallen from grace. Why we're not growing like we ought to. Man, some of you ran a good race. I can remember some of you were running a good race. What hindered you? Same thing that hindered these folks. Let's look at it for just a few moments. Let Paul answer the question. First thing that hindered them, they got to listening to the wrong thing. The wise man said in Ecclesiastes 7:21, he said, also take no heed to all the words that are spoken. There's just a lot of stuff Baptist folks ought not listen to. He said to these people, now you've been doing good. You've been running a good race, but something has hindered your running. What is it? Well, it's the temptation that every born-again person faces. You get saved, you get in the race, you're running a good race, and the temptation is to start listening to folks who are on the sidelines, who are spectators, who don't intend to run the race, and they don't want you running it. And they'll want you to listen to them. They'll want to be telling you some things. You just can't believe everything you hear, you see. So here we are, we get saved, we're running a good race, everything's going good, and then somebody comes up to us and says, you know, I've been meaning to talk to you. I need to tell you something about that Trinity Baptist Church. All they're interested in is your money. And that preacher, he's a crook. He works on a percentage. And that's the reason he's always... And I just thought you ought to know that. Oh yeah, it goes on all the time. I mean, yakety yak, you see, yakety yak. And we just need to understand that you can't listen to everything that's going on in the world and run a good Christian race. It can't be done. You cannot be the steward of your finances you ought to be and listen to the world in any aspect. I most of you know the story, but I married Wanda. I had to go up to Oklahoma and get her. Brought her back across the Red River. I want you to pray about the green card thing. I still hadn't got it resolved. But, and I thought we had talked about everything, and I thought we had everything. I thought we were on level ground everywhere. Shows you, you don't ever know. And we'd been married, I guess a year before it finally came out. But she is a basketball fanatic. She's crazy. What year before last, when the Mavericks won the deal? You can tell I'm real high on it, but whatever the deal was. Wanda began to say, let's watch it. Well, I didn't think it hurt anything, you know. And so when we turned on, I'd be sitting there in the easy chair, and all of a sudden I'd hear some clapping and hollering. Hello, it's her. I do like to watch a good basketball play develop and the handling of the ball, and she don't care a thing about that. It's one thing, win or die. It's a whole deal. You know the playoffs go on for an eternity. And so every week we're in the motel somewhere, And she has some good sides. Before we leave the motel, she always whispers something spiritual in my ear. And so we'd get ready to go, and she'd lean over and say, "Honey, remember now, the game starts at 8:30. Well, we'd get back to the room, turn on the television. I'm trying to get my shoes off and get comfortable. And all of a sudden, "Whoo!" I said, "Wanda, you've got to quieten down. They're going to call the front office and throw us out of the motel." Basketball people are that way. I've never been down to the American Airlines Arena. It looks nice, but it's always full of crazy people. Screaming, blowing horns, hollering. Karen, you can't hear yourself think. I've got a good seat at home. I watch some of that in there. I wouldn't go down there at all. It's just crazy. Well, during that playoff season, they were interviewing one of the Maverick players, and they brought that situation up. They said, "How in the world do you concentrate in here during the game?" He said, "What do you mean?" They said, "With all that racket that's going on, all that screaming and horn blowing and the bell ringing and the crazy announcer." Did y'all hear that announcer in Florida? He's brain damaged. He said, "How do you concentrate?" They said, "Oh, we don't hear any of that." He said, "You don't?" He said, "No." He said, "What do you hear?" He said, "We hear nothing but the voice of one man, Rick Carlisle. We hear the coach. When he shouts instructions, we hear the coach. We hear nothing else." Are you getting the point? You're not ever going to run a good race till you quit listening to folks who are not running the race and listen to the coach. He said, "You get ready to shoot those free throws and those glass backboards." He said, "There's 200 or 300 crazy Yahoos back there slinging those things and hollering." They said, "Oh, we just tune it out." You're getting better theology tonight than you think you are. There's a lot of stuff you just need to tune out if you're going to be a good steward of God's things. Their first problem, and you can prove it real easy, was they were listening to the wrong stuff. They got to listening to those Judaizers, and it hindered them running the race. Let me give you a second thing that hindered it. Not only did they get to listen to the wrong stuff, they started looking at the wrong stuff. It's sort of a gimme, see? Now, Paul had been no different with these Galatians than he had been with anyone else. If you will just back up to chapter 3, just a page or two to chapter 3, I want to read one verse to you. It's just a profound statement of Paul's philosophy of preaching and teaching. And he said, "O foolish Galatians, who hath bewitched you that you should not obey the truth, before whose eyes Jesus Christ hath been evidently set forth, crucified among you?" Paul's getting very blunt with them. He's saying to them, "Listen, I set Jesus Christ crucified before your eyes. Who's been messing with you?" See, they got to looking at the wrong stuff now. They've been listening to the wrong stuff. Now they're looking at the wrong stuff. And, you know, in a church like this, you have some runners. They're running a good race. You have some joggers. They're jogging a pretty good race sometimes, you know. You've got some walkers. But one thing for sure, if you're going to run, jog, or walk a straight line, got to keep your eye on the finish line. You can't pay attention to the rest of that stuff. You can't look at everything the world flashes on television and tells you that you need and go buy it and be a good steward. There's not anything on television. I'm not going to shoot my television. I'm not advocating you shoot yours. But there's nothing on television that will make a good Christian out of you. There's sure nothing on television to make a good steward out of you. Matter of fact, it'll take everything you've got. And if you listen to it and you start looking at it, you're going to lose your stride. Better keep your eye on the finish line. You know, your eyes are funny things, aren't they? I can look at you. I probably told you this, but I'm so good at it. I can look at you and see every fault, every sin, every mistake, every bobble you ever made as a Christian. I look in the mirror. I don't see none of that stuff. How you do with it? Sure. We see everything but Christ. And you know, we give old Peter a hard time, don't we? We Baptists love to give Peter a hard time. Cussed a little bit. Did some other things. Lied a little bit. But he did walk on the water, didn't he? Somebody said, yeah, but he sunk. When? When did he start sinking? When he took his eyes off Jesus. Well, why in the world would anybody, pay attention, why in the world would anybody ever, any saved person, ever take their eyes off Jesus? What in the world is there to look at besides Jesus? Well, what was Peter looking at? His circumstances. That's what kills us as a steward, because the economy is bad and the job situation is bad and my employer is bad and money's not worth what it used to be. And you're right on every one of those issues and wrong about the big picture, because none of those things matter. Has nothing to do with you running a good race financially. If those are the things you've been counting on in order to be a good steward, then you're in a life lesson form and learning that you can't count on those things. It's a faith thing. And you get a word from God and you do it. And we must relearn to look at Christ and not our circumstances. Now, your preacher has not said one word to me, so leave him alone. He probably can't count on both hands. I don't even know if he can count, period, or not, but he probably can't count on both hands the number of people who came in and said, well, now, preacher, I made a commitment last year. I made a financial commitment last year, but I didn't know I wasn't going to get that bonus. And I didn't know they were going to cut my hours. And I didn't know I was going to lose my job. Well, I hope that wasn't what you made the commitment based on. See, you've got your eyes on the wrong thing. It will hinder your race. It will cause you to fall from grace as far as the growing part is. And we need to understand that and realize it. You see, the writer of Hebrews said in chapter 12 in verse 2, looking unto Jesus, the author, he started it, and the finisher of our faith. And he'll take care of everything in between. Well, you did run well. Who did hinder you? Oh, they got to listening to the wrong crowd. They got to looking at the wrong things. And when you do that, number three is a gimme. Then they started talking about the wrong thing. See, once they took their eyes off Jesus, once they allowed other things to come into their life, once they got all bent out of shape about their circumstances, then they become hypercritical and judgmental of everybody else and start talking about them. It's an amazing thing. You say, preacher, that doesn't happen. Well, let's check it out here in chapter 5. Drop down to verse 13, if you would. We're still in context. Chapter 5, the book of Galatians, verse 13. We've got to deal with that little liberty thing that we brought out in verse 1 first. See, now verse 1, stand fast therefore in the liberty wherewith Christ hath made us free. Absolutely. But now verse 13. For brethren, you have been called unto liberty, only use not this liberty for an occasion to the flesh. We have been set free. We have not been set free to do anything that the flesh points out we ought to do. And most of our stewardship is ruined because of fleshly purchases and fleshly spending, stuff that we have no need of. We'd be fine without it. But the flesh gets in on it, and we begin to major on the flesh. Well, let's come on down now. I said they got to talking about the wrong thing. Only use not liberty for an occasion to the flesh. Then you've got that word of contradiction, that but by love serve one another. For all the law. Now, their problem is they've been listening to that law stuff. They've been throwing it around. So Paul, in his simplicity, said, I'm going to explain that law thing to you in just two or three words. Watch it here. For all the law is fulfilled in one word. He called it one word, but it's sort of preacher talk because it's more than one word. For all the law is fulfilled in one word, even in this, here's his one word. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. That is big time theology. You won't get a course on it probably at the Bible college, and that's not a knock, but that is big time theology. We're not here for us. Hello? No. We're here for others. So thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. And then we've got another one of those contradictions. We get the very opposite of that now. But if you bite and devour one another, take heed that you be not consumed one of another. Can you believe that? He's talking to human beings and says, if you bite and devour one another, take heed that you be not consumed one of another. Any of you ever raised chickens? Don't have a chicken, right? Got one, two, got a few liars in here too. You get to, back when I grew up, our little biddies, we got our biddies, they came in on the train, went down to the post office to get them. And you start raising those biddies, when they got big enough to turn loose in the chicken yard, it wouldn't be long, just about every shipment, you'd get one chicken, maybe more, but you'd get one, he'd start pecking on those other chickens. It wouldn't be long, he'd peck every feather off one of them. Wouldn't be long, you had a naked chicken running around out there. And if you left him alone, you'd peck that chicken to death. Cannibal chickens and cannibal Baptists. They'll get to pecking on one another, and once they get blood, they are never satisfied. And preacher blood's their favorite. Yeah. Peck, peck, peck. He's talking about talking, biting and devouring one another. You see. Yeah. Let me go ahead and do my ugly bit. You got somebody in this church, big mouth, arrogant, always straightening everybody out, criticizing, minimizing. You tell him or her that I said, they're not much. Doesn't take any size at all to criticize, to minimize, to peg around. Look, if I understand verse 14, and I'll let you help me with it, but if I understand verse 14, this Christianity thing is a people business. It's the people part of it that take all the money. The reason we need to be good stewards. It's the people part that takes the mission money to the foreign fields. It's the people part that get the buses out to the neighborhoods. It's the people part, the money part, the people part that need the buildings. And Christianity is a people business. And maybe the worst fault of all, you know, he said, now all the law is fulfilled in this, that thou love thy neighbor as thyself. Maybe the worst fault of all is a Christian worker who can't get along with another Christian worker. One bus driver can't get along with another one. One preacher can't get along with another one. One Christian that can't get along with another. Maybe that's just the worst fault of all. So I'm going to say to you, if your growth has been hindered, maybe you ought to check your mouth. That might be a good place to start, you see. And some folks, I'm convinced of it. It took me a long time to get set. I'm convinced some folks just go to church to be heard. Amen. Yeah. Saddest thing in church, see folks wasting their time talking about stuff that just doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all, and all their time is spent talking about it. Now, they're not going to talk about what I need to be doing for God. They're not going to be talking about what I need to be looking at to see if I can find God's will. They're not going to be talking about what I need to be listening to discern God's will. No, they're going to be talking about stuff that does not matter. People. And we need to understand that. Just saying things about other people that ought never have been said. Boy, the amens are rolling tonight, aren't they? I might as well have preached on money. Let me read you something, because some of you are taking this entirely too lightly. Give me time to find it. It's in the book of Matthew, chapter 12. Just a little simple statement that the Lord made. Let's see here now. Verse 36. Listen. Let me read verse 35. Matthew 12. A good man out of the good treasure of the heart bringeth forth good things. And an evil man out of the evil treasure bringeth forth evil things. But I say unto you, that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give an account thereof in the day of judgment. For by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned. Now I'll just let you define justified and condemned any way you please. One of them is going to be real bad, and one of them is going to be real good. And it's by our words. It's what we talk about. You can't go home and talk about a new car, a new house, new this, new that. You can't do that and be a good steward. You can't look at every ad that comes on. You can't listen to every pitch that's made. No, sir. That stuff just needs to go the way of it. See? Well, what did hinder you? You did run a good race. What did hinder you? Well, once they started listening to the wrong stuff, looking at the wrong stuff, talking about the wrong stuff, then they had their priorities on the wrong stuff. I want you to follow along as I pick up verse 16 now. We had read down to verse 16, and he's talking about that consuming and biting one another. And you come to verse 16, this I say then, walk in the Spirit, and you shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. Now up there in verse 13 where we started, it said we did not have liberty for an occasion to the flesh. We don't have the liberty to spend our life seeing how much stuff we can accumulate, how many dollars we can get in the bank account, how many vacations we can enjoy. We don't have that liberty. Now, nothing wrong with a vacation. Nothing wrong with having money. Nothing wrong with any of that. We don't have the liberty to live for that. That cannot be our priority. It has to be the result of our priorities. And our priorities have to be something entirely different. So listen to him. This I say then, walk in the Spirit, and you shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. That seemed like a simple remedy for the lust of the flesh, doesn't it? A simple remedy to stop the flesh from dictating what we do. What is it? Walk in the Spirit. It's a choice. Knock, knock. It's a choice we make. It's a choice we make whether we'll be a good steward or not. It has nothing to do with our job or our money. It's a choice that we make led of God. Watch verse 17. We're talking about the priorities messed up. For the flesh lusteth against the spirit, and the spirit against the flesh, and these are the contrary one to the other. Watch this statement. So that you cannot do the things that you would. Now, when your priorities are wrong, it's not just that you've got a bad priority. It's that you cannot do the things that you would. The analogy here is that of an anchored sailing vessel. The captain and the crew get on the ship. They get the ship all ready. They're waiting for the wind, the breeze. The breeze comes up. The captain gives the order to hoist the sails. The sails are hoisted. They catch the breeze, and the ship begins to strain and tremble. But it goes nowhere. It does not move. Why? Because the anchor is down. You say, silly illustration. Oh, no. For the anchor lusteth against the wind, and the ship cannot do what it ought to do. And when you and I have our priorities all messed up, when we're holding on to something we ought not be holding on to, then we cannot be what we ought to be. That brings us to our final thought. What did hinder you? What did hinder you? Oh, I've been listening to all those commercials. I got a good shotgun, but man, they got a new one out. Ooh. I got a good boat, but they got one that's 47 foot long now. I got a good car, but they got a new one. It smells different. No, nobody knows what I'm talking about? You can't listen to that stuff. Then you'll go looking at it. Then you'll go talking about it. Then you'll talk her into it. And then you're into it. And then your priorities are nailed down, and you got that note, and you cannot do what you ought to do. Last thought, maybe the biggie. Once you do that, then you start thinking the wrong thing. You just begin to think the wrong thing. Let's read on, if you would. I'm going to skip verse 18, 19, 20, 21. Those lists, the works of the flesh, they're horrible. That list where you'll go if you start looking, listening, talking, and prioritizing the wrong things. That's where you're going to wind up. But, verse 22, the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Against such, there is no law. And somebody says, well, I have the love, joy, and peace. I have three of those. No, you don't. No, you either got them all or none of them. They're not plural. They're singular. The fruit of the Spirit. Okay. So are you running a good race? Now, I don't do basketball. I sure don't do golf. I've never had a golf club in my hand, honestly. After watching Tiger Woods' episode with his wife, I sure don't want one in Wanda's hands. But, where I grew up, golf was a gentleman's game, and you played it at the country club, and I missed on both ends of that. And so I just never played golf. And watching it is as exciting as watching the grass grow. But in some of those pro shows where these pro golfers are trying to teach folks, they tell them that, and this is interesting to me, they say now, the 95% of the success in putting the ball is concentration. What do you think? See, you'll never become a good steward without concentrating on it, without thinking about it, without planning it. Did you hear the preacher? And I know he was talking about my offering, and I thought it was really good. But he said he believed in planned giving. Sure, sure. I find if I'm doing it, it's always a lot more if I plan it. The only time it's any more than that is when Wanda tells me what to give. Goes right on up then. But no, there's something about being single-minded. See, the reason the Galatians were having the problem, they started listening to them, and then they started thinking about what they were saying. And that's what will happen when they sidle up to you and say, I need to talk to you. I need to tell you something. And you, if you're willing to listen to it, then the devil will see to it that you think about it. And if you're willing to let the world tell you that you can't be a good Christian and you can't be a good steward and all that Christianity is after your money, then the devil will sure give you an encore to hear that again. We need to think on the right thing. You see, their problem was just what Paul was talking about in 2 Corinthians chapter 10. They had not brought their thoughts into captivity. You and I have to decide what we're going to think about. You can't just throw the doors to your mind open and go into that TM stuff. Somebody said, I'm going into transcendental meditation. I'm just going to open my mind and see what comes in. Well, I can save you the time. I can tell you what will come in. The devil, he'll bring all his troops with him. He'll take over. You'll give him a place. Somebody said, well, they're just thoughts. Now, they're not fleeting things. They're the father of our deeds. That's always the truth, you see. And whether we're kind and helpful or cruel and hurtful, whether we're a good steward or a bad steward, whether we're growing and running a good race or whether we've fallen from grace, depends on what we've been thinking. We just need to get it straight. Are you running a good race? Some of you have been through the whole number of years, and if you look back, your giving hadn't grown. You say, well, my income hasn't grown. It may be because your giving hasn't grown. Because the Bible says, give, and it shall be given unto you. That's a promise of God. The Bible said, be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. The Bible says, open thy mouth wide, and I will fill it. We just need to settle down as a child of God and officially tonight find an old-fashioned altar and go ahead and tell God what he already knows. Lord, I've been looking at the wrong thing. I've been listening to the wrong thing. I've been saying the wrong thing. I've got my priorities wrong, and I've been thinking wrong. And I'm changing it all tonight, and I'm getting on the road to running the good race again. Now, if you're here as a Christian and you don't wish to run a good race, then I do not understand. But if you're here with the rest of us who know we're not running the race we ought to be, then you want tonight to set out to run a better race. Would you bow your head, please? Every head is bowed. Every eye is closed. We get ready for our invitation of the evening. Not for you to make any kind of a commitment except you're going to get back in the race. And you're going to run a good, straight race, looking at what you ought to look at.